My guest today is John Stemple, Senior Professor of International Relations at UK's Patterson School of Diplomacy and International Commerce. And we're talking about the situation in Syria. Thanks for joining me today.
Glad to be here, Alan.
Now, there's obviously been a lot of debate on Capitol Hill about what the U.S. should or should not do in responding to the Assad regime's use of chemical weapons on Syrian rebels. What have you not heard that you think should be part of this conversation?
Well, the most important thing I've not heard is what happened the last time we had a general threatening to use gas on his own people, and that was in 1984 in the Reagan administration. And the Reagan administration made the decision not to attack the general known as Chemical Ali of the Iraqi army. And he used gas and killed several thousand Kurds, maybe as many as 7,000 Kurds. And there wasn't a lot of discussion about it. The decision was just made not to go after him, and nobody made a fuss. That's in contrast today, to which we've had a lot of hand-wringing and talking about how to go about doing it and so forth. And of course, the president has not come forth with anything yet other than his selective bombing targets. And for people who haven't kept up with the problems of poison gas, this is, as one British general called it, a bridge too far for many folk. And yet there is a serious problem in that part of the world, and we are now wrestling with the question of what action do we take and when.
All right. If obviously the U.S. does retaliate militarily, how effective can that be? I mean, everybody knows about what's going on. They watch CNN. You're obviously not going to be sneaking up on the Assad regime. How effective can an air campaign be on selected targets?
Well, that's the real question. And the statement or the evidence that the administration has put forward so far has not been persuasive. And my feeling is that if they don't go a little further and talk a little more about this evidence that really has the administration speakers who've seen it earnest, that they're not going to get a large majority, if even a majority, of the Congress to go along with them.
What happens if that argument is not persuasive enough and President Obama does not get the amount of support he needs to do this?
Well, I think he'll have to think good and hard about that, but I think he'll have to go back to the drawing board and try and figure some other way of doing it that doesn't threaten to kill quite as many innocent civilians.
Is a blockade possible, like just isolating and cutting off Syria in a way that could that be done?
It's pretty well been covered. Unless you're willing to shoot down Russian aircraft, you can't keep them from being resupplied militarily. It's difficult to say, not knowing the difficulties. The president is talking about specific attacks from missiles. There is some argument about the accuracy of these cruise missiles, and that's what raises the question of unarmed, hapless civilian casualties. If the president is rebuffed by Congress, I think he will probably have to work out some other ways involving more or less pinpointed airstrikes to do something. But there again, that raises questions of how the rest of the world is going to react to it. That gives many of our congressmen and a lot of our citizens pause.
And one of those major concerns is about Iran. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, the Iranians have said that they don't like the idea of attacking the Syrians, and that they would – the supreme commander said, we will do our very best to work on – do something about this. And that's probably all they're going to do at this point. If they found a chance to hit the U.S. and not get retaliated on or with minimum risk of retaliation, they would probably do it if the U.S. were to unleash the cruise missile attacks. The alternative for the Americans would be to find a way to support the rebels within Syria. In other words, go with the down and dirty, support the armed forces there. The difficulty with that one is that a lot of those armed forces are jihadists of another variety who would, if in power, probably be perhaps even less savory in the end than the Assad regime. So it's a real ball of wax.
Let's talk a little bit about Israel and the U.S.'s unflinching support of that ally and where they factor in.
Well, fortunately, the Israelis have kept their mouths shut on this one, although I have no doubt that they would love to see Bashar Assad severely crippled and the Syrian army severely downgraded. They're not going to take any action. They can't really afford to take any action at this point. And indeed, there are a lot of people in Israel that believe that they should stay out of it completely, that that's not a war that they want to fight, just as there are a lot of people here that believe we shouldn't get into the active combat phase. The alternative, and it's something Tom Friedman suggested in his column a couple of days ago, would be to work hard with training the Free Syrian Army, be willing to get American boots on the ground, if not American combat tanks and aircraft, and in other words, giving the military forces opposed to Assad a significant strength to proceed forward. That might not in the end make a lot of difference, but the threat of doing that and the actual beginning to do that might cause him to step away from the poison gas.
And certainly would set up some parallels to the Vietnam conflict that the U.S. found itself embroiled in the 60s and early 70s.
Yes, it would. And the question, of course, is how will a president get out of this or get out of this without taking many hits? And the problem is, the bottom line is, he's going to take some hits getting extracted from his present position, no matter what he decides to do, in case the Congress opposes it.
We are hearing rumors that the president may do a national address and basically make his case to the American people, maybe talking past Congress or talking over their heads and going directly to the people. How effective do you think that would be?
That'll be a real question. I think, given the situation that he's talking from right now, unless some interim steps are taken, it won't be effective. If he just goes to the Congress and calls for full support of this kind of attack without putting forward any other alternatives or ifs and buts, that the public is likely to be against it. And if the public's against it, the Congress are likely to be against it too. And he's got a real bad example sitting right in front of him, because the British prime minister and the foreign minister said, we will support you on this, and went to Parliament for a vote. And Parliament resoundingly said, we ain't going to do it.
And the prime minister said, I got it.
Yes, he did.
In no uncertain terms, I got it. I get
where
you're coming from.
And the prime minister can be, particularly if he irritates his own party, can be dumped faster than the president can be dumped. So he's got it, and he's offline. Now, there are others who are willing to help, the French. I'm not sure that their help is going to be all that significant, but it would be good if we do go in, however we go in, to have some allies who are working or at least supporting us with world opinion.
Final question is a two-parter. What do you think should happen, and what do you think will happen?
Oh, you give the easy ones. Always give the easy ones, don't you, Alan? What should happen is that we ratchet up our assistance to the Syrians, and perhaps if there were a clean, clear target, and I don't have the intelligence on this, only an administration would know, to take out one or two selected targets, just as we don't really want to do this, but this is what could happen elsewhere. And that would save a little bit of the president's face and yet not get us into a full strike. I think what will likely happen if the president doesn't get a shift in American support is that he will not do the missile attacks, and he may be then forced to do some on-the-ground assistance to the free Syrians. That's dirtier and messier and less decisive, but it also creates less problems for him internationally in other areas.
Our guest today has been John Stemple, Senior Professor of International Relations at UK's Patterson School of Diplomacy and International Commerce. You can hear the full interview with Professor Stemple at our website at wuky.org. Thanks again for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.